Hello there, I'm Dr. Curtis Finch, Superintendent of Deer Valley Unified School District. Welcome to a new year and a new episode on the Soup Scoop Podcast. I'm sure a lot of our students are thinking TGIF when it comes to Fridays because many Fridays in the school year are Professional Learning Community or PLC Fridays when the students are released 90 minutes earlier than usual. Many of DVSD's teachers are also thinking TGIF, not because they get off early, but because they get to come together to learn how to make learning better for students. On this episode of the Soup Scoop, we answer the question of what is a PLC and why do we take 90 minutes on Fridays to do it. More importantly, you'll hear how it has made a measurable impact on student test scores and achievement. We have PLC pros from the district level, a PLC model campus at Union Park School, and PLC leaders at Barry Goldwater High School who will share their success stories and how it's made it possible through the PLC journey. That's coming up on today's Soup Scoop, and we'll get the conversation going after this quick pause.
If your child is turning 5 by August 31st, now is the time to sign him or her up for kindergarten at a DVUSD school. This is a new and exciting time for your child, with new surroundings, new friends, new skills, and new challenges. And DVUSD promises to nurture and care for your child in a safe and secure environment. DVUSD Kindergarten is a free full-day program with special classes for art, music, and PE. Before and after school care is also available. To sign up today or for more information, visit dvusd.org/kindergarten.
Welcome back to the Soup Scoop. I'm Dr. Curtis Finch. Many years ago, when I was a middle school and high school math and language arts teacher, I was pretty much on my own. That wasn't a personal choice, but that's just how the teaching profession was set up. Teachers would teach, students may or may not succeed, and then just moved on to the next subject. That method simply doesn't work today, as some students need that extra push to grasp the concepts in the classroom and apply those concepts to the learning. Students aren't the only people who need help. Sometimes the teacher needs a fresh idea or a different approach to help those students who are struggling. That's where the PLC process comes in. PLCs, or professional learning communities, allow teachers of similar grade levels or similar class subjects a chance to come together to discuss what's working well for them and their students. When leading teachers share ideas with others in the group, those ideas can be used with other classrooms, and we're seeing positive results with the PLC approach. We'll hear from two sets of teachers who will bring us to the classroom later in the podcast. But let's first get the district view with DVUSD's Director of Organizational Improvement, Paula DeMarteau, and PLC Manager, Amy Moore.
I am Paula DeMarteau. I am the Director of Organizational Improvement and Professional Learning. And I work, I have a team under me, which is a PLC training team. So it's one of the things that I do. And Amy Moore is the manager of that team. So she's here as well.
Hi, everybody. My name's Amy Moore. As Paula mentioned, I am the manager of professional learning communities. So I work with all schools, elementary, middle, and high school, just really helping to build high-functioning collaborative teams.
All right, let's dive into this. What are those 90 minutes used for? Where did that come from? What's the history behind this?
I'll give you a little bit of history. We started working on PLCs all the way back in 2015. Officially as a district. So it's been about 8 years or so, and PLCs really are professional learning communities, and at each school is a professional learning community, and teachers get together in groups called collaborative teams to look at what they're teaching, if students are learning it, if they're not learning it, what they can do differently to reteach the students or re-engage the students, and if they've already learned it, what they can do to enrich learning opportunities for the students. So in 2015, we started looking at the research behind the importance of getting teachers together, giving them time to collaborate. We studied as a system and learned about some great processes to do that effectively. And then we were lucky in 2018, our governing board, they voted to give us early release days. So we started doing 90-minute early release days on most Fridays. And that gives teachers time to get together and do this really important work.
Well, you kind of hit professional learning communities. Can you expand on that? It sounds like an educational buzzword. What is that, Amy?
It is an opportunity for teachers to come together as a team. So they are not operating individually as silos, but actually have a group that have like content that they can talk about. So we have a couple different concepts here. Some teachers get together in their grade level teams. So maybe it's a third grade team that gets together. But Deer Valley is also unique in that we have created structures to allow multi-schools to come together. Example, if you have a seventh grade science teacher, we really want that seventh grade science teacher to be able to talk science content with another seventh grade teacher. So we may have other schools within Deer Valley that meet together as seventh grade science teachers that they can really dive into content. We want to be able to use each other to find out what do we want students to know, be able to do, what are their standards, what are their skills that we're trying to help them, and then come together with a check for understanding. How do we know that these students have gotten it, have learned it? And if they haven't, let's use these results to figure out what can we do differently to help students bridge those gaps.
Could you tell me what do you think the benefits are? And now you are both at the district office, so you get to see the umbrella over 42 schools. What are the some of the benefits of PLCs and this early release concept? What are some of the benefits?
Well, when we started this work, we right away, the teachers let us know that they just loved being together with their peers and talking about teaching and learning. I mean, like, above all, like, that is the biggest benefit, is teachers have time to talk about instruction, to talk about specific students. We also have new teachers. So when the new teachers come into these groups, they're not starting from scratch. They already have agreed upon essential standards that they're teaching, agreed upon instructional practices and assessments, and so they can really start from day one with so many resources. So there's an obvious benefit to students.
Mm-hmm. I think in addition to that, we're seeing results from our students. The data is showing us that when teachers can come together and use expertise and really drill into our small checks for understanding, did the students get these skills that we taught this past week? We're able to really figure out, did they get it, did they not? And then allow time to give them extra support. So our data is showing students are increasing and accelerating with their learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we look at, we have district benchmark data, and we use a program called Tableau. And we put all of the schools on that program, and we can choose like five schools that are working together, like a fifth grade or a seventh grade science team, like Amy mentioned. And we can see like the results of those schools. And what we want to see is that they're all helping each other's scores get higher. That it's not a competition where we're trying to beat each other, but we all want all of our kids to be proficient. And so that is what we are seeing in the trend data, which is really awesome.
What are some of the opportunities for teachers to get more training around the PLC process? And you mentioned new teachers. So if I'm a newer teacher, my team's not as strong or wants to get stronger, what happens? What do we do to help that process?
Great question. So we have built in some support systems for teachers to help one another. That big support system. So we have a program called Model Teacher Leaders, where we'll have one or two representatives from every school that meet with our PLC team, and we help build their skills in this collaborative team process and how they flow through it. How can they facilitate a team environment? How do you help onboard and help new teachers? They take that out to help their collaborative team grow. And then we also have those model teachers who are within our second year. They're actually taking on projects school-wide, and they're helping build capacity, onboard new teachers as a school-wide system.
And then 2 years ago, we started doing our own PLC Summit, which is super fun. We have the Solution Tree PLC Summit that takes place nationally here in Arizona every year. And 2 years ago, we decided that we have so many teachers involved in this process. Wouldn't it be cool to do it in Deer Valley? And so last year, we had almost 1,000 teachers participate. So super fun. We have a keynote speaker. We have sessions from our own teachers who are sharing what they're doing in their classrooms, what's successful, what works. The feedback has been really good from our teachers. They like it. They've come back 2 years in a row. And then they, after going to the 2 days of the sessions, they have the rest of the week to plan with their team. So take the information that they learned and then go plan and put it right to work so that they're ready to go at the beginning of the year.
So last question. So is this professional development, because I'm on the outside, I'm a parent, I'm a community member, is it a professional development opportunity or is it a collaborative opportunity? What is it, this thing called PLCs, this 90-minute early release? What's really at the heart of it?
I would say it is job-embedded collaboration and learning. It's ongoing. It never stops. It's not a one-time learn about this one thing and move on. It is a continuous improvement cycle. What are we doing? Did it work? How do we, if it worked, awesome. How do we repeat that? If it didn't work, like, what could we do differently? And it's, everybody gets that chance to, like, share with each other and learn from each other. We have all the experts, amazing teachers in DBUSD. They share with each other, and that's how we learn and grow.
Amy, you were just sharing with me earlier that Deer Valley is becoming a showcase district for this. Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, Paul and I were just at the Arizona Department of Education a couple weeks ago as we were helping other schools and school leaders learn about the process and how Deer Valley is building capacity within our district on this process. As I said earlier, we do something unique that I don't see other districts doing, which is partnering multi-schools together. Again, if you have a seventh grade science teacher, you really want that science teacher to be able to have an opportunity to work with other science teachers. So we're able to offer that. Both Paula and I have also worked with other districts who have sought us out to say, hey, we hear great things about what's happening in professional learning community in your district. Tell us a little bit about how you got started and how you're seeing success and what you're doing. So we have been working also just individually with some other districts in helping them learn through what has worked for us and some things that haven't worked and what we've learned from it and how we continue to grow.
Also, we have several of our schools are model PLC schools. So they have through Solution Tree, they have been named as a model PLC school. Our district, in fact, has been named as a model PLC district. In fact, we're the only district in Arizona currently that is a model PLC district. So we work really closely with that organization. We also work with Project Momentum through the State Department of Education. We're always trying to improve our classrooms, our schools, our district, and we're at the top of that, and we're always reaching out to others to see how we can even move further.
Well, I do talk to other superintendents, other from this state, in this state, and other states. What are the three key ingredients to having a successful PLC process? Because they say, oh yeah, we're doing PLCs, and this is when we work on our field trips to make sure they get organized. That's not what PLC are about. What are the three key pieces that you need to make a successful program?
Good question. Actually, we get asked this question a lot. So I think the difference in doing it right versus kind of doing PLC light is one, it is most successful when it is led by the organization. So it took us a little bit of time to kind of figure out like what that looks like. And now we are there where we are all aligned between our departments. We're all in our superintendent, our goals are all aligned, and all of the work that we do supports the PLC process. So that first is important. We're all doing the same thing. The second is time. You cannot do this without time. So we are so appreciative of the time that we have on Fridays, of any extra time that our schools give our teachers, additional release time, that is helpful. And the third thing is you have to stay focused on the work, on kids. Like, it has to be like about individual kids and helping them learn.
Learning. It's all about the learning.
Mm-hmm.
I always say it this way. We don't care if you're a great teacher. We want to know, did the kids learn?
Yeah.
That's the key. In college, you can be the great teacher, and the kids come and go, and they pay bills whether they learn or not. In our world, we are really into great learning. Therefore, if you are a great teacher and the kids are still not getting it, then that means something needs to be changed. And that's why collaborative teams can say, hey, I do this, this works better for me, try that, and that's how that collaboration has value.
Yeah, and our teachers are, like, fantastic. Like, yeah. They are always problem-solving and trying to figure out, like, what can we do differently? What are you doing? It's just, it's so impressive how far education has come over my career of, I think, like, 28 years now.
I think the final piece that is adding to what needs to happen is building teacher competency of allowing them to understand the skills and building that, because I believe with competency builds confidence. And we see our teachers just starting to flourish and having that confidence, not only in their instructional practices, but then as a team, being able to share ideas and share their data, what's happened, what's worked, and how do we help accelerate where our kids are at.
All right, keep up the great work. We're at PLC, a district known throughout the country now, and so we need to keep on the path, keep doing a good job. You guys keep up the great work, and we'll continue to plow the trail.
Thanks, Dr. Finch.
The PLC process sounds good in theory, but when you see it in action in the classroom, that is where you really see the value of bringing teachers together on a regular basis to share ideas. We'll now take a look at two schools, one that feeds into another, to see how PLC is changing the learning process. Union Park School opened in 2020, and it was not a normal school opening by any stretch of the imagination. UP opened during the worst of the COVID-19 pandemic and was facing booming enrollment due in large part to its location and a rapidly growing part of our district. In 3 short years, Union Park has earned model PLC status. 7th grade ELA teacher Kristen Eager and 5th grade ELA teacher Jessica Carr share how the PLC process launched the learning connections at Union Park.
My name is Kristen Eager. I'm a 7th grade ELA teacher here at Union Park.
My name is Jessica Carr. I'm 5th grade ELA at Union Park.
Nice. We are talking today about PLCs. What is a professional learning community, and maybe what are you trying to do when you're in there? We talked a little bit about the 4 questions.
Okay, well, some people think that a PLC is a meeting, and that's what we do on 90-minute early release days. There's actually a continuous process. It's not just a meeting, but time for us to collaborate as staff. So when we collaborate, we think about our students first. We think about 4 guiding questions. What do we want the students to know and be able to do? How will they learn it? What do we do if they don't learn it? And what do we do if they already know it?
So you're in a meeting with your grade or maybe a team of along a subject. What does that meeting look like?
In that meeting, we use the 4 questions to guide us. So the beginning of each meeting, we might be in a different phase of that continuous process. So we pick up where we need to pick up, and we're using those questions to help us to know where are we and where do we need to go with the students. And yes, we use data in the process throughout. Our data is what drives our instruction and drives our decisions and helps us to create our common formative assessments while we're meeting.
So are you looking at specific student data, or are you looking at the 7th grade math scores together as a unit, or both, or what?
We analyze both. So we look at our overall score, but we really focus on each individual student, and we look for their misconceptions. If they do not understand the standard the first time we teach it, then we look for misconceptions on how we can reteach during our Tier 2 instruction. If they have mastered that standard, we talk about how we can enrich them or what our next steps in teaching are.
So kids are, you're looking kind of for groups and maybe the impact of your teaching, whether it worked or not. And then let's say it really works in your class. Do you share that concept with your neighbor?
Yeah. So the teacher that has the highest number of proficient students would speak first, and they would talk about instructional strategies that worked in their classroom. And they would have usually student work as evidence that proves that the instruction worked. And then we go from there and we talk about things that worked in our classrooms and we share that information.
So give me another example or examples of how it helps you as teachers when you're in these groups with a really specific mission. Obviously it impacts students, but tell me about how it changes you, helps you grow as a teacher.
As teachers, we want to have the best instruction the first time around, and this has really helped us here at Union Park, as well as our multi-school collaborative teams, to really tighten our instruction and use these strategies that we share to have the best Tier 1 instruction that we possibly can. So our general instruction the first time around, so we meet the needs of as many students as we possibly can, which helps us to mitigate that amount of Tier 2 instruction that we have to provide. If we end up with a smaller number of Tier 2 students, we're better able to meet those individual needs of those students and get them back on track.
Okay, so your Tier 2 is obviously when you're starting to do your interventions, Tier 1's every student?
Correct.
Okay, so you talked about multiple other systems that you are talking to or other grades or schools. How does that work?
When we talk about instructional strategies with other schools, with multiple schools, then we can try it in our own classroom, especially when we're reteaching students. So if we're teaching a strategy and students aren't getting it and they're not showing proficiency and they're one of our Tier 2 kids, then we can try a different strategy to help when we're reteaching them, because they didn't understand the way that we were doing it first. And sometimes as teachers, we don't know other strategies that might be beneficial to help students meet mastery of those standards.
I've said this before and repeat it wherever I go. Today, in the old days, we looked for good teaching. Now we're looking for good learning. It's one thing to teach it, but if the students didn't get it, then obviously we need to look at our strategies. What are we missing? What words, maybe some vocabularies is where they were stumped on, or the examples. Can you give me an example of that, of where how you kind of tweaked your teaching to make a difference for the kids?
One thing we do is, in addition to the multi-school collaborative teams, we also have vertical teams here at Union Park, and we meet as a K-8 band, and we look at specific grade level bands within that K-8 spectrum, and we talk about school-wide where we see needs, and we identify those needs, and we're able to focus on that. So in that realm, we're able to talk about strategies and specifically where we see gaps so that we can fill those gaps for those students.
Across all subjects as well?
Across our band is ELA. Okay. We have vertical for every content area.
Okay. So I think another obviously major part, I believe, in PLC's professional learning communities having value is the interaction of teachers in groups. Priceless. Can't put a tag on that, because it is technically kind of forcing teachers to work together, but it's with a common mission, and therefore they latch onto it and gives them purpose. Have you noticed that in relationship to Union Park? She's only 3.5 years old, and you guys are already a model PLC school. How does that happen?
We just all want students to learn. Students come first. So we do collaborate. We understand that we don't know everything. So it's really important for us to go and seek experts. That way we can grow as educators. So we're lifelong learners, and we do this because we want our kids to be successful. Our principals have always let us attend the PLC Solution Tree conferences, which has made a bigger impact on us professionally that we can bring back to campus as leaders.
So part of the culture here at Union Park is collaboration. That has been just woven into who we are and what we do. So all of the teachers that are new to our campus, all the students that are new, feel it from day one. And like Jessica just said, we truly do lean on each other as professionals, and that is what professionals do. We learn from each other. And like she just said, we realize that we don't have all of the answers, but collectively we can get pretty close to that and we can help each other out. And in the end, and our ultimate goal is to help our students.
Can you give me some examples? This whole concept has made an impact on the school itself. This is a brand new school. How do you go from opening the doors 3 years ago and now being a model PLC school? What happened? What are the ingredients that you need to have to fit that?
It's just so natural for us. It's just who we are and what we do. We live, breathe, and constantly focus on collaboration and what's best for students. We share data throughout grade levels. We talk about what worked and what didn't work. We try to decrease variability on campus. That way, let's say there's an instructional strategy called CER. We use it all the way up. That way, we don't have to reteach that strategy, but instead a skill to go with these different strategies. Just coming to a common consensus on what's working, what's not working, and how we can help kids. For example, like walking in a straight line. We teach kids how to walk in a straight line in kindergarten. In first grade, they remember how. So it's the same process with instructional strategies, just being consistent with kids.
Can you give me an example of an instructional strategy that an average parent would know that that changed the way my kid writes, reads, etc.? Can you give me one?
Well, in middle school, a big one is group discussion. So they learn really well from their peers. So they give each other feedback. They talk about an article that they've just read. They share their annotations. So it's that collaboration, just the way as teachers we collaborate, the students are collaborating on their work as well, which solidifies that knowledge. Or they will bring up another discussion where somebody in their group has a weak area, and just in discussing it, they're realizing that they're answering each other's questions, or it brought up another question that then can be presented to the entire class, and we have a whole class discussion about it.
So from a grading perspective or an analysis perspective, you said you look at data. How would you decide if the students are making progress on that one example you just gave me?
That is an instructional strategy, but then that will translate into that student's individual ability to be able to look at a text, read it, close read it, analyze what they're reading it, and produce a coherent answer, like Jessica just mentioned, CERs, that's claims, evidence, and reasoning. So if I present them a question for assessment, they're able to utilize that strategy that they just had in class where they're discussing with their peers, being able to analyze the text and produce a coherent answer where they're providing evidence and their own reasoning.
Which is an important ingredient probably for the state test as well, I'm assuming.
So we're teaching them to be critical thinkers through instructional strategies that work for them, but we grade their answers. So we would grade their response. We wouldn't grade whether or not they use the strategy, because one strategy might work for someone when it doesn't work for someone else. So we make sure that we're just grading what's on the standard, not the actual strategy itself.
Okay. So when it comes to the kids learning, the side you're looking for is, are they following the model? Are they getting the idea that when you get cornered on a state test and it says, read this text and explain what's happening here, ... they should be able to automatically go to your strategy and think, oh yeah, I need to have these three parts to it to be explain what I'm doing.
One example I can give right now is we're working on argumentative writing. And a strategy that I utilize, it's a tool, it's a graphic organizer, it's a flea map. And it breaks down the components of a well-organized essay into little chunks. So they have a well-developed introduction to include a thesis statement. Each reason becomes its own paragraph, and then their counter-argument and their conclusion. But we, when it's taught, we walk through it very slowly. And on the day of testing, those kids can create their very own flea map on a blank sheet of paper where, you know, they take their notes and then type up their essay. And it has become so ingrained in how they write, it's part of their process, that they're able to do it just almost naturally. And
right.
That carries with them year after year.
Sure, and they can carry it on to college too.
And we do a flea map also in fifth grade, similarly to what she's saying, to decrease variability. But we have opinion writing in fifth grade for our standard, but they're able to translate that flea map that they work on in fifth grade to seventh grade when they do argumentative. So another way of decreasing that variability.
Nice. By using the same instructional strategy throughout the grades, kids won't have that test anxiety when they're under pressure to produce something. They'll automatically know, oh, this is what I need to do. That's the value.
And one thing that helps us as a campus also is that from the very beginning, all of the teachers here are very open-minded. So when we talk collectively, whether it is in our multi-school teams or our vertical teams or grade level teams or bands, we really talk about what the kids need and what we as teachers can do. So as Jessica just said, they do flea maps in fifth grade. All the way up to seventh, they do it in eighth. So we're able to really make sure that we're all on the same page, and where our focus is what's best for the students and helping them to learn and achieve more.
Right. And so during your PLC time, you can compare if the students are getting it at the different grades. You can check in with the different grades as well to see if the progress is being made. All right, that sounds great. Thank you for your time. Sounds like you are experts, obviously, in a model PLC school and a model PLC district. So keep up the great work and continue to share with your peers. We love it. That's how we help students grow. Good job.
Thank you.
Union Park feeds into Barry Goldwater High School. And with the student success at Union Park, we want to keep the bar set high as students go into high school. English language arts teacher Erica Torres and Tate Malone and math teacher Kyle Martin share how different grades and different subjects work together to make learning at Goldwater impactful on both students and teachers.
I'm Erica Torres. I teach ELA here at Goldwater. I teach freshmen and juniors. And I'm also the PLC team lead for ELA 1-2 freshmen.
I'm Tate Moline. I am the ELA co-department chair for the department, and I teach sophomores this year. I'm doing general education honors, and I'm also the yearbook advisor, and I'm the collaborative team lead for the sophomore team.
Hi, my name is Kyle Martin. I am the math department coordinator and chair. I teach college algebra. I teach AP calculus, IB mathematics. I work with a lot of our algebra 1-2, algebra 3-4, and geometry CTs on a weekly basis.
All right, so this is the heart of Barry Goldwater here. We have language arts and math, the best. All right, tell me a little bit about, for our audience, tell me a little bit about the PLC process, the professional learning community process here at Goldwater, how it impacts you, and maybe how it impacts students.
Sure, so we meet about once a week on Friday afternoons, and that's when we get to talk about basically how our students are doing and what we've been learning. We use formative assessments and common formative assessments to kind of measure that, and that's kind of at the discretion of the team what those look like, how often we administer them, but really the purpose of those 90 minutes together is to make sure that students are learning the essentials of the essentials, and that's what we agreed on. So at the freshman level, we basically ask ourselves, what do freshmen absolutely need to know before moving on to sophomore year? So it's great to talk with Tate and the sophomore team about, hey, you know, we're teaching this. Is this good? Like, what else do we need to prepare them for sophomore English? And we kind of go from there. So it's a lot of backwards planning, yeah, at least at the freshman level.
What's the, you mentioned common formative mm-hmm. assessment. What's that? What do you mean by that language? What is it, what are you using that for?
Sure. We're trying to give all the students a guaranteed and viable curriculum. We want all the students, no matter what teacher they have the same opportunities in their classroom. So when we come together as a team, we all look and say, okay, this is what the skill that we're focusing on. This is the state standard we want them to learn. And how are we going to measure that? And if everyone is measuring it a different way, we don't know. This student, we think, has learned it. We think this student has learned it. But did they? You're really comparing apples and oranges. When the team comes together and we all decide this is how we're going to measure, we are all giving our cumulative knowledge to weigh in on what needs to be looked at and how we measure it, and then we all give the same assessment, or really like a test, but that can look a lot of different ways, which is why we call it an assessment. But that way all the students are getting the exact same measuring stick, if you will.
So then you know who got it, who didn't get it.
Correct.
Okay. So are you working with student data in front of you? How do you figure out if the students are getting it or not, just beside the assessment?
Yeah, so when we assess students, we assess them with these essential standards, these standards that we want our students to have as they are completing the course. We look at the data through Google spreadsheets, and that spreadsheet is very transparent within our departments and within our administration, so they can take note of that. And we can also be proactive. By looking at the data, we can provide intervention to students for enrichment. So if a student isn't getting it, then we can provide future opportunities, like the next week, to target individual students on a one-to-one basis or in small groups.
All right, so if not everyone's getting division of whatever, you can put them in a smaller group and just work with those four kids?
Mm-hmm. And provide a differentiated instruction, so not necessarily teach the same way that we taught to the whole class, but to an individual student. Okay. And look at learning gaps.
All right, tell me a little bit about how how that's impacted you as an instructor. How have you changed with this process? Really, it's forcing you to work together in a positive way, obviously, for students. But how does it change you as a teacher?
So I started teaching here a couple years ago, actually as a student teacher. So I kind of got to observe the PLC process. And I thought it was okay back then, but I think in the last 5 years we've come a long way. There's just a lot more clarity. As a student teacher, you know, I already felt lost, but I felt especially lost. I'm like, how do they just know what they're teaching? But a lot of it comes from like summer work or work at the very beginning where we agree on, you know, at the freshman level, we have three big standards each semester. That doesn't mean we only teach three things, but those are like our main focus. So, like I said, there's just a lot more clarity. And then the part that we were talking about with differentiated instruction, if something didn't work the first time, we have colleagues we can go to and say, what did you do? Because clearly your kids got it and maybe mine didn't on this standard. So what strategies did you use? What lessons, what activities did you do that I can try with my students? So hopefully they get it the second time. So it helps a lot. It's a really, like Kyle said, a really transparent environment, but it's all for the kids to make sure that they're learning.
Back when I taught, which was like a billion years ago, we closed the door and we did our thing. This is obviously not the environment. This is totally different. So this is actually intervention in real time. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about how the impact of that concept affects students. If, for example, math, the research says if you miss a concept and you do it wrong, it takes 7 times for you to do it correct before you can do it without assistance, that concept. So how does this impact the student learning? How do you see it change students in their abilities to adapt and or relearn or change their habits?
Well, I think like how you were saying, it used to be your own island. Every teacher was an island. And now it's not like that. The school is a culture of learning. We want all students to be able to learn. So if a student is not getting it with the teacher that they have, there's all these resources now that are available. And we can come together as our teams and say, help me. This one student isn't getting it. I'm not sure how to reach them. Because we always say, you know, there's a teacher for every student. And that student may not have that exact teacher. And so we'll even share students in that when we have some intervention time, I might pass off, I might say, Erica, can you work with this student? You're excellent teaching this skill. And I think that my student would really benefit from getting some time with you. And so we can work together in a collaborative way to just come together as a school and not feel like this student is my student. All of the students belong to all of us, and so the students really benefit from having a culture of learning throughout the entire campus.
You mentioned culture a couple times there. Last question. How does the PLC process and this concept of really putting teachers in teams affect and impact the culture at Barry Goldwater?
Well, I think that it's what makes us like a whole organization, like us as one. I think in order for the machine to keep going, every cog has to be moving and with itself. So I think that it's every teacher that's involved for the betterment of our students and for student learning. A great example is in Algebra 1-2. We have our RTIA teacher, which is Response to Intervention for Academics. She's in there with the Algebra 1-2 students, where we provide a math lab, which is a supplemental math course with Algebra 1-2 for the students that maybe had a tough time when they were in eighth grade. And we work with those teachers. We explain to them, like, this is what we're going to teach this week. And they provide additional structures. So everyone's involved. Paras are involved. We have even student teachers that are here, too, that are also part of the PLC process, too.
So in general, it pushes the campus together in one direction.
Exactly.
Nice. Well, keep up the great work. A lot of great things happening here at Barry Goldwater. And again, just email me or text me or let me know when you're doing something cool and I'll come check it out. All right. Keep up the great work.
You can bet I'll be dropping by Goldwater to continue to see their PLC successes and all the other DVUSD schools experiencing that academic upswing. When the kids come home a little earlier on Fridays, now you know we're not just lounging around for an extra 90 minutes. Our teachers and staff are hard at work sharing ideas on how to be better instructors
and helping our children become better learners while they are in their classrooms. If you have any suggestions for interviews or a show topic on the Soup Scoop, you can send it in to us by visiting dvusd.org/soupscoop. You can also listen to older episodes there and get caught up on previous topics. Soup Scoop can also be found on Spotify, YouTube, and the Apple Podcast platforms. I'm Dr. Curtis Finch, and you're up to date on all things PLC and DVUSD with the Soup Scoop Podcast.